It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Topping the news, Gulf Arab warplanes bombed Shiite Houthi rebel targets in Yemen Thursday as the Saudi Arabian-led military offensive continued. Airstrikes are focused on military sites and the rebel-held capital of Sana'a, including the main airport. Houthi officials say at least 18 people were killed and 24 wounded. It's drawing angry reaction from Iran. VOA's Scott Bob reports.
The Iranian government denounced the airstrike, saying they would complicate efforts to end a conflict that is likely to further inflame sectarian hostilities across the region. Iran supports Houthi rebels in Yemen who follow a similar form of Shia Islam. The Saudi government said it would do whatever is necessary to protect what it called the legitimate government of Yemen. The Arab League, which is gathering for a summit in Egypt, said it fully supported the Saudi-led effort. Yemeni President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi had taken refuge in the southern city of Aden after being driven from the capital Sana'a last month. The airstrikes were aimed at halting a Houthi advance, which had reached the outskirts of Yemen's second-largest city. Scott Bob, VOA News, Jerusalem.
French authorities say the co-pilot of a doomed German Wings jetliner deliberately crashed the aircraft into the side of a mountain in the French Alps on Tuesday, killing 150 people on board. Marseille prosecutor Brice Robin said audio evidence shows 27-year-old pilot Andreas Lubitz, a German national, locked the pilot out of the cockpit of the A320 jetliner. Then, while alone, Lubitz manually changed controls to send the aircraft into a gradual 8-minute final descent at 700 kilometers an hour. This is VOA News. Nigeria's president and his main challenger have released a statement pledging to respect the outcome of Saturday's election as long as it is free, fair, and credible. President Goodluck Jonathan and his opponent, Muhammadu Buhari, also called on Nigerians to refrain from violence on any acts that may jeopardize the election's credibility. Police in Uganda say they have received credible information that Somali militant group Al-Shabaab is planning an attack on the capital, Kampala. The warning Thursday follows a similar message from the U.S. Embassy in Kampala a day earlier. Police say Al-Shabaab may target public places such as hotels, as well as malls, markets, and parks, and urges people to watch out for suspicious activities or objects. A Kenyan member of parliament is under investigation for allegedly raping a woman in his Nairobi office. VOA's Gabe Joslo has details.
A crowd of about 60 activists marched past the Supreme Court, the police headquarters, and toward the National Assembly, chanting, "We don't want excuses, we want justice." The march comes as Member of Parliament Gideon Mwiti Ireya faces accusations of beating and raping a woman who had come to his private office a few days ago to discuss official business. Local media report the woman was also forced to take an HIV test before she was assaulted. Ireya, who denies the accusations, has changed his story several times, first saying he did not know the woman, and then later admitting that they had been out together at a club he owns. Charges have yet to be filed. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nuclear negotiations between the United States and Iran resumed Thursday in Switzerland, with a deadline for an agreement just days away. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said before his meeting with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif that the alternative to a deal is letting Iran expand its nuclear program full speed ahead. The U.S. and its P5+1 partners, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany, have a March 31st deadline for a framework deal with Iran. Deadline has already been extended twice. The six partners want Iran to curb its uranium enrichment program to prevent it from being able to build a nuclear weapon in exchange. Devastating economic sanctions on Iran would be lifted. Iraqi forces carried out operations to recapture the city of Tikrit on Thursday, came hours after warplanes from the U.S.-led coalition launched airstrikes on Islamic State targets in the city. An Iraqi military officer told the Associated Press that clashes intensified as Iraqi troops and special forces moved toward the center of Tikrit.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerians vote tomorrow for president, and both the ruling party and opposition are predicting victory.
This is incontrovertible, that it is better to stick with a candidate who has been performing than to try an opposition that has shown that they have no manifesto, no ideology, no program for the people.
Olisa Metu is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. We'll also hear from a key supporter of opposition candidate General Buhari. South Africa and the United States play chicken as a trade agreement looms. And a new study says children are more likely to die from Ebola.
So for the very youngest children, infants less than 1 year old, the case fatality is about 90%. It's extraordinarily high.
Chris Dye is the World Health Organization Ebola epidemiology team leader and co-author of the study. Zimbabwe police raid the offices of a local news agency, and scientists discover a heat-resistant strain of beans that promises to survive climate change. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. As Nigerians vote tomorrow, Saturday, in presidential elections, supporters of both the ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and the opposition All Progressives Congress, APC Party, are expressing confidence their candidate will emerge victorious. Olisa Metu, National Publicity Secretary of the PDP, says President Goodluck Jonathan will be reelected because his policies enjoy overwhelming support among Nigerians, and his main challenger, General Muhammadu Buhari, has no vision for the country. He joins us now live from Abuja. Good morning, Mr. Metu.
Good morning.
These are the final hours before Saturday's vote. What is it like on the PDP side?
On the PDP side, we are excited because finally the hour has come. Nigerians are willing. They want to come and vote in a peaceful election. Tomorrow, we believe that when Nigerians go to the poll, they will vote for a candidate who is tested, who has a record of proven performance that has affected all sectors of Nigerian economy. Someone who has stabilized the body politic. Someone who has promoted unity of this country. And somebody who has made remarkable progress to the economy of our country. They will vote for our president. This is incontrovertible, that it is better to stick with a candidate who has been performing than to try an opposition that has shown that they have no manifesto, no ideology, no program for the people. All they do is propaganda and deceit.
Mr. Metu, if everything you said about President Jonathan is correct, then why is it too close to call? Because if you talk to many people who know Nigeria, they're not very ready to call the vote in favor of your candidate.
In the new media, the social media is too close to call. But actually, the vote is not close at all. I said we're going to win overwhelmingly, decisively, we will win. The opposition is interested in media hype, whereas we are interested in performance. They're interested in propaganda, whereas we are interested in the facts. The opposition is interested in deceit, whereas we're interested in the truth. So that's why it's too close to call. Only in the media, not in real life.
We know that President Goodluck Jonathan has met with his challenger, General Buhari. What did they discuss?
Promotion of peaceful election, of the fact that they will call their supporters, their party members to order in their speeches, in their statements, in their conduct just before the elections, during the election, and after the election. The conduct is very important.
So you think if President Goodluck Jonathan loses the election, his supporters will be willing to let it go?
We are not entertaining the thought of losing the election. How can you win an election when the Nigerians want you, when everybody is clamoring for you? So they love the president. He's reachable. He's young. He's kind. He's amiable. He's jovial. He's someone that is your neighbor next door. Is that friend that you can talk to?
Thank you very much, Mr. Metu. So nice to talk with you. And look, come back to me right after the election and maybe come back in a joyous mood, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Olisa Metu is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. The opposition All Progressive Congress, APC Party of Nigeria, says its candidate, former military ruler General Muhammadu Buhari, will win tomorrow's presidential election. Chief Mrs. Kemi Nelson is the national women's leader for the southwest region of the APC. She tells reporter Peter Clotte, who is in Nigeria covering the election, that Buhari will win because 6 years under President Goodluck Jonathan have seen the rise in insecurity, poverty, and the lack of adequate electricity. And she said Nigerians are yearning for change.
It goes without saying, the people are yearning for change. The people are tired of a government that is run on lies. People want to see action. For 6 years, this country has not been the same. People are groaning. Poverty is on the rise. There is insecurity, no energy. And you see, when you are in government and people cannot trust you, then you just pack your bag and baggage and go. They have lost the confidence of the people.
What makes you think that people trust General Buhari to be the change candidate, because he's been there before?
Buhari is a leader of note. If the man stands up to say, whatever had been done in the past under my watch, I take responsibility. I promise you that I will do something better if I'm given another opportunity. And don't forget, of all the military heads of state, Buhari is the only man to date that never promoted himself. That speaks volume of the kind of person that man is.
What do you say of recent polling data that shows that the PDP is showing a sense of life, and they're predicting that President Jonathan could win between 7 to 17%? What do you say to the polls?
The polls that they did that favored them, was everybody knew that that was purchased. It's obvious. If you looked at what has been happening consistently, even a day before what they brought out to us, it was showing a clear lead on the path of Buhari. So whatever came out after that was purchased.
Well, some people are saying that President Jonathan is showing some sense of life in the north, including Kano, where General Buhari enjoys a lot of support. What accounts for it?
The people are wiser. Their minds are made up. They just see a Father Christmas throwing money around, and people want to have a bite of the money that he's throwing around. That's not definitely will not translate to any vote for him in the north. Buhari, people want the change. And you see, this Jonathan man has succeeded in dividing this country along ethnic line, along religious line. He has destroyed every fabric. Every organ of government has been destroyed. He has destroyed the judiciary. He has destroyed the political class. Virtually everything he has destroyed.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Chief Mrs. Kemi Nelson is national women's leader for the southwest region of the opposition All Progressive Congress APC party. She spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte, who is in Nigeria covering Saturday's election. A new research finds that Ebola progresses more quickly and is more likely to be fatal for children under 5 than for adults. International scientists led by the World Health Organization and Imperial College London analyzed data on Ebola cases in children under 16 in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The findings, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, show Ebola has affected about 4,000 children under age 16 in the epidemic raging in West Africa. This is around one-fifth of the nearly 25,000 cases of the disease confirmed by the World Health Organization. Authors of the report say they do not know how many of the more than 10,300 Ebola deaths are among children. But WHO Ebola epidemiology team leader and study co-author Chris Dye says death rates among children are extremely high.
So for the very youngest children, infants less than 1 year old, the case fatality is about 90%. It's extraordinarily high. As we move through older ages of children, you can see the fatality rate declines, and it falls to a level of about 50% among children who are 10 to 15 years old. Now, that's relatively good news for children 10 to 15 years old, but nevertheless, a case fatality rate of 50% is still extremely high for an infectious disease.
The report says the case fatality rate for adults aged 16 to 22 is 65%. It notes the incubation period, that is, the time between becoming infected and showing symptoms, was 6.9 days for children under a year, compared with 9.8 days in children aged 10 to 15. Dr. Dye says Ebola affects young children quite differently than adults. He tells VOA it is extremely important to get Ebola-infected children into treatment quickly, but adds this often does not happen because symptoms of the disease are not always detected in children.
But a particular reason why children might have been missed is because in the early stages of Ebola infection, the symptoms that they develop are rather like symptoms of other infectious diseases and other conditions. For example, fevers are common, and there are many different causes of fever, among which Ebola is only one possibility.
Several clinical trials of Ebola vaccines and drugs currently are underway in the three disease-stricken West African countries. Dr. Dye notes children often are overlooked in these trials, which usually are conducted on adults. He says the study focuses on the need to make sure vaccines are formulated in a way that offers protection for children and that children also can benefit from drugs that may be developed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 27th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Humble Chicken is at the heart of a critical trade deal between South Africa and its major trading partner, the United States, as a September deadline looms for the renewal of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa's troubles have grabbed far more recent headlines than its trade assets. The country has gotten attention for its free-falling currency, its often violent political clashes, and its notoriously unstable energy grid. But South Africa's trade minister says Africa, and his country in particular, is undergoing transformation. Trade Minister Rob Davies spoke to journalists in Johannesburg.
If you look at the statements that are coming from any number of African leaders now, they will tell you that this continent, having improved its economic performance in the last decade or so, having now appeared on the world stage as an important economic player, not a continent that is a basket case or anything like that any longer, that the challenge and issue for this continent is that the next phase of African development needs to be characterized by industrialization.
But industrialization is not inexpensive, a fact overshadowed as South Africa literally plays chicken with the United States. This common bird is at the heart of a major disagreement between the two countries. Two U.S. senators from chicken-producing states are threatening to drop South Africa from a multi-billion dollar trade agreement, the African Growth and Opportunities Act, unless South Africa agrees to import American chicken. Davies says this disagreement over poultry is anything but paltry.
There are plenty of win-losers. Another one of the win-losers, we just say, okay, we'll stop being a country that produces chicken and we'll keep a going. That would be a win-lose. But I also said that the other side is a win-lose. Take us out of a go because of the chickens, and the U.S. chicken producers don't get access to the markets. As simple as that. And the other win-lose would be that there are all kinds of other implications for a go. I don't think that the senators or myself who are trying to work with the chicken producers on each side, we're not looking at that. We're looking at a win-win outcome. And I think we can get that. We can get a deal.
South Africa has benefited from AGOA, which was enacted in 2000 to allow African nations duty-free and quota-free access to the U.S. market. Last year, AGOA accounted for about $52.1 billion worth of trade, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce. South Africa accounts for more than a quarter of that total. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's deputy sheriff on Thursday raided the offices of a local news agency, The Source, an affiliate of Thomson Reuters news agency, over two stories involving telecommunications giant Econet Wireless, seeking information that the mobile phone giant says is confidential and has a bearing on its internal private and commercial arrangements. Irwin Chifera has details from Harare.
The raid on the news agents relates to two published stories in which Econet Wireless is alleged to have extended a $30 million loan to the government, and the other about businessman Philip Chiangwa using land to pay off a $2.1 million Econet Steward bank debt. The swap follows a ruling on 16 March by High Court Justice Musakwa granting a provisional order stopping the source from publishing or republishing information relating to Econet Steward bank and its customers, including details of their loan or credits agreements. Chris Mike represents the Source News Agency. He says Econet used the High Court order to raid and search the news agents' offices.
Paragraph 4 of the provisional order specifies that the applicants, together with their lawyers and with the assistance of the sheriff and the ZRP, may search the premises, the entire premises, and computer systems of the respondents. While they were conducting the search, we were obviously concerned with the sort of access they had to certain information that we believe had nothing to do with the order. But details of that particular complaint will be presented to the High Court for a proper determination by the judges.
Econet, which has celebrated rights lawyer Beatrice Mtetwa as one of its attorneys, says the information used by the source is confidential and has a bearing on its internal private and commercial arrangements. Mike said he is waiting for a ruling on an agent application he made last week seeking the protection of sources and media rights. This raid provoked anger within the Zimbabwean media and human rights defenders, who are charging that Econet is now colluding with the government to intimidate the media. Secretary General Foster Dongozi of the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists says Econet and Steward Bank had, in his words, trampled on journalist rights and urinated on press freedom.
This is a very sad day for democracy. This is a very sad day for freedom of expression. This is a very sad moment for access to information, particularly given the fact that we are only a month and some days before we commemorate World Press Freedom Day.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe National Chairperson Kumbirai Mafunda said the raid violates media freedom, which is guaranteed by the Constitution. Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, hardly a friend of the media himself, tweeted against the raid this afternoon, saying it was very concerning. He added in his words that some big person was trying to hide a big stink. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The recent discovery of a variety of heat-resistant beans is promising to save the humble bean from devastation in the face of climate change. Hilary Hewler has more for VOA from Nairobi.
For centuries, beans have been a crucial food for hundreds of millions of people around the world. In Africa and Latin America, they're a staple crop and sometimes a community's only reliable source of protein. But researchers say with global temperatures expected to rise by up to 4 degrees in coming years, the bean could be at risk. A bean researcher for food security group CGIAR, Steve Beebe, says because beans originated in a relatively cool climate, the effects of global warming could be devastating.
Beans are going to be under a lot of heat stress in the future if we're not careful. We calculate that within a generation, if we don't get moving, we could lose as much as 50% of the bean area around the world.
Beans are more vulnerable to higher temperatures than other staple crops like cassava and maize, he says. But on Wednesday, CGIAR announced that it had discovered a new variety of heat-resistant bean that can handle temperatures several degrees higher than normal beans. A cross with the tepary bean, a small variety once grown by Native Americans, this new strain of heat-beater beans can handle nighttime temperatures of up to 23 degrees, whereas most bean crops will start to fail at 18 or 19 degrees, says Beebe.
It's a species that's naturally adapted to high temperatures. We had some interspecific crosses sitting on the shelf, and when we started realizing what we're up against with rising temperatures, we pulled them off the shelf. That's where we found most of the really promising heat tolerance that we're working into the breeding program pretty much across the board.
The next step, he says, is to introduce heat tolerance into a range of beans already familiar to consumers, then to distribute them to partners in Africa and Latin America. CGIAR is also trying to breed bean varieties that would be more tolerant of drought or flooding, as well as working to boost their iron content to make them more nutritious. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Egypt beat Equatorial Guinea 2-0 in Cairo as Qatar edged Algeria 1-0 in Doha, and African champions Ivory Coast beat Angola 2-0 in friendlies played on Thursday. Elsewhere, Japan hosts Tunisia as Gambia welcome Mauritania today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Ghana plays Senegal. Comoro Islands engage Madagascar. Mauritius play Togo. Seychelles face Kenya. The Democratic Republic of Congo engage Iraq. And Morocco welcome Uruguay. On Sunday, Ivory Coast host Equatorial Guinea. Zambia play Rwanda. Tanzania host Malawi. South Africa play Nigeria. And Botswana engage Mozambique. Morocco play Djibouti in a beach soccer encounter. While in women's football, Egypt hosts Kenya in Cairo. In rugby, South Africa play Argentina, France, and Japan in Group C action at the three-day IRB series in Hong Kong, China today, Friday. In Group D, Kenya face the United States of America, England, and Wales. In cricket, Ghana play Namibia, Botswana face Kenya, and Tanzania engage Uganda at the start of the ICC African 2020 Championships in Benoni, South Africa today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Botswana face Namibia, Ghana play Tanzania, and Kenya engage Uganda on Sunday, Namibia face Tanzania, Botswana challenge Uganda as Ghana encounter Kenya. In boxing, Ghanaian Emmanuel Tagoa fights Gilbert Reyes of the Philippines for the WBA International Lightweight title in Accra, Ghana today, Friday. Turning to athletics, defending champion Emily Chebet and Bedan Karoki lead Kenya's charge to retain the women's and men's team title at the IWF World Cross Country Championships in Guiyang, China tomorrow, Saturday. Ugandan World Junior 10,000-meter champion Joshua Cheptegei looks the strongest candidate to challenge the Kenyan monopoly of the junior men's crown, while the Kenyans are expected to dominate the junior women's event. The Kenyan party could also be disrupted by their perennial rivals from Ethiopia and Eritrea. The winner of the senior men's and women's races gets $30,000 each, with prize money going to the top six finishers in each event. The team prize winners share $20,000. In all, $280,000 are up for grabs for top performances. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, March 27th.
As Nigerians goes to the polls tomorrow to choose their leaders, the contestants and their supporters should please give peace a chance so that the electorate shall choose their credible candidates. I am Prince John Ushia Obaniku Ibo Budu Kato Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's president and his main challenger have released a statement pledging to respect the outcome of Saturday's election as long as it is free, fair, and credible. The candidates also call on Nigerians to refrain from violence or any acts that may jeopardize the election's credibility. And police in Uganda say they have received credible information that the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab is planning an attack in the capital, Kampala. The warning Thursday follows a similar message from the U.S. Embassy in Kampala a day earlier. That is it for this Friday, March 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Join host Chaka Sali and VOA's Straight Talk Africa this Saturday at 1800 UTC for special coverage of Nigeria's elections. You will get on-the-ground reports from VOA's journalists in Nigeria, in-depth discussion, and expert analysis of the most important election issues. Join us for Straight Talk Africa special Nigeria Decides right here on Voice of America.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee you.